Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Kelly Gallup, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fishing with cripples and spinners. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Kelly a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and then we'll keep you informed. The broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. If you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. Content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Kelly Gallup about fly fishing with cripples and spinners. Royal Gorge Anglers is a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado. They also provide both walk, wade, and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas South Platte and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado. Located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Before we introduce Kelly, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a three-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Kelly's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away, and this is an unannounced nice gift that Kelly has so nicely provided, we're going to give away one of his books called Cripples and Spinners, and he's going to autograph that copy and send it out to the lucky winner at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away, as a second prize, a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado, and their website is www.frontrangeanglers.com, and you can redeem that either in person or through the web. Now, here's how you're going to have to win. You've got to be the first person to answer the question at the end of the show that we pose. The question will be something about what Kelly and I talk about tonight during the show, and you must submit the answer along with your name and location in the text box on our homepage, the same place that you can ask questions during the show. So listen closely and use your best typing skills at the end of the show, and maybe you'll win Kelly's book. Well, our guest tonight is Kelly Gallup. Kelly started his fly fishing career at the age of 13, tying flies for the local tackle shop. He has over 40 nationally recognized fly patterns of his own. He started guiding at the age of 16 and is still guiding to this day some 30 years later. He owned and operated the Troutsman Fly Shop in northern Michigan from 1981 to 2002, and in the spring of 2002, he sold the Troutsman and moved to Montana, where he and his wife, Penny, bought the Slide Inn Lodge on the Madison River. Kelly has written two books, Modern Streamers for Trophy Trout and Cripples and Spinners, which we'll be talking about tonight. Kelly has been published in nearly every fly fishing periodical in the country and is now one of the editors-at-large for Fly Fisherman magazine. Kelly was also one of the hosts for Fly Fish TV on the Outdoor Life Network. In 2004, Kelly was nominated and received the Living Legend Award by the Federation of Fly Fishers. Kelly, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing.
Hey, thanks, Roger. Appreciate it. And by the way, 34 years guiding now.
Oh, 34 years. Time flies, huh?
Yeah. Big 5-0 this year.
Well, I say welcome back to Kelly because Kelly did a show early on for us in the first year that we were doing Ask About Fly Fishing, and we did it on fishing streamers for trophy trout. So if you missed that one, When you're done here tonight, go out and look in our archive for that show, and I'm sure you'll enjoy that because it's a great show Kelly did, and, teaching us about how to use big streamers to catch big trout. So enjoy that show as well. I hear it's a little chilly up there, huh, Kelly?
Yeah, just starting to get cold. It was been pretty nice, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's been
you had the same long Indian summer like we had in Colorado, I take it.
Yep. Just hit us yesterday, so can't complain about that.
Good, good. We're going to talk about, and you wrote a book on this, about cripples and spinners. So this isn't an often discussed or common topic, and so you'll have to give us all your secrets here tonight. But we're actually talking about two different things. Cripples and spinners are two different phases and not always of the same bug or the same hatch or so forth. So maybe you better start out with one, like, say, the cripples, and kind of give us a definition and tell us its significance, to us as fly fishers.
Well, Raj, the cripple is basically anything that has, you know, that's flight challenged, if you will. And it can happen to any insect. Mayfly, caddis, midge, doesn't matter. For all practical purposes, any terrestrial that touches the water is a cripple because they don't have the mechanism to come off the water. They don't touch down and take off. You know, if you see a grasshopper in the water, he's in the water. And a spinner is the final life stage of the mayfly. Now, technically, caddis and the rest, midges and stones, don't have spinners, but many of them bend or hit the water and they're done, you know, it's over for them, just like with the mayfly. But technically, only the mayfly is called a spinner. And it's just its final stage when they've laid their eggs, they've died, and they're on the surface of the water, or are dying, and they don't have the ability to get off the water again.
Now, what about trichos?
Trico is one of the best spinner falls on the planet Earth. The spinners, all mayflies have a spinner, and all mayflies, you know, they all have a, you know, they go from egg, nymph, emerge, and they're a dun, and then they become a spinner. On certain bugs, they hatch, mature. Most bugs take a day to 2 days to become a spinner, and they go to the trees, and then they become a spinner. Some bugs, like a trico, the males hatch at night and, you know, then the females hatch in the morning and they're sexually mature, so they don't actually have, you know, a 2 day cycle. Some of them hatch immediately and they're ready to go. But the trico has an incredible spinner fall. That's what 95% of people fish when they fish a trico is the spinner fall proper.
Okay. Now, so the mayfly has a short life cycle, as you've just said, either overnight or 1 day or 2 days at most, it sounds like. And so the spinners are actually spent, right? I mean,
yes.
They've done their thing, they've mated and laid eggs, and they're
yes.
finished, basically.
And that's really the significance to the spinner. And ironically, in a lot of places, especially in the East, we did a lot more spinner fishing than we did duns. In the West, in a lot of the freestones, you'll fish the hatch, which people call, you know, matching the hatch or fishing the hatch. That's what they're fishing when the insects first come up from the bottom and they hatch. And the significance to the spinner is that when the insect hatches, it can hatch over a long, you know, a long section of river. And when they come out of the water, they hatch, they can be carried downstream, during the nymphal migration, you know, when they're swimming to the top. So they can be all over the place. Whereas with a spinner, and I have no idea how they know this, but the spinners, which are the egg-laying insect, when they come back to a specific style of gravel or substrate. And so you have this huge concentration. All of them come back to specific areas. And they all die, you know, lay their eggs and die in those same areas. And so they're very concentrated, which makes them just trout crack. They just, you know, the fish will move to these areas to where these bugs, and again, I don't know how they know to go to these areas, but if you've ever seen a trico spinner fall, previous to the spinner fall, you'll frequently see funnel clouds of spinners. They look like mini tornadoes in the air. And those all come back to the same type of area because they need to deposit their eggs in a specific style of substrate of gravel or whatever, you know, whatever it is they're looking for that specific bug. So that's why the spinner is very significant to the angler.
Because you can target those specific areas where the fall is happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do they, Kelly, do they come to the water, the mayflies come to the water to lay their eggs and then fly up and then fall back in? Is that the pattern?
They sometimes, Roger, yes, they do. Most of the time when they come back, they hit the water, lay their eggs, and they are spent. That's it.
Oh, right there. Okay.
They're done. I mean, sometimes they'll deposit, they'll swim up and down and drop. Caddis do that, and, you know, some may fly. Sometimes they, but at some point, and it's a pretty short window, usually a really good spinner fall, and by the way, that is the difference between a hatch and a fall. A hatch is when the bug is hatching from the bottom, coming out of the water, and a spinner fall is when they've come back to the water. So, but most of them come back and die pretty much. You're looking at about, on a really good spinner fall, is probably a 40-minute window, much like the hatch.
Right, right. But this could be a day or 2 days later from the original time they
Correct.
Hatch.
Correct.
Yeah,
generally
in a different
generally it's
part
24
of the river,
hours.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Generally 24 hours, you said. Okay.
Generally.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, you had mentioned the caddis, and I've seen them. They seem to dip in the water and then fly back up. Now there, they're laying their eggs when they hit the water. Is that what they're doing?
Sometimes, yeah. Some caddis are dippers. Sometimes, you know, they fly up and down and deposit their eggs. Some are oviposing where they go down into the water. They actually, a lot of caddis swim to the bottom and deposit their eggs, actually stick them to something, and some drop, and stoneflies do the same thing. Stoneflies they'll kind of come up, dip their abdomens, they'll go up and down and up and down, and if you watch them really closely, sometimes you'll see they'll drop their eggs from, I've seen salmon flies drop them from 20 feet in the air. And you can actually see the little egg sac. It's a cluster of eggs. You can see it drop and hit the water. But they're all different.
Okay. Maybe
just a little bit.
Why don't fly fishers give much importance to, you know, spinner fall fishing as opposed to the hatch? I know you just said in the East Coast it's more prevalent, but why in the West Coast has it not been more prevalent?
Well, part of it, I think, Roger, is the fact that there was kind of the old guard didn't pay a lot of attention to it. You know, in the book Cripples and Spinners, in the beginning I write about, and this isn't a shot at Art Flick or anyone else. It was just that Art Flick wrote in Streamside Guide that basically that the spinner was of no significance to the trout because their theory was that there wasn't much left to them, which is it's totally contrary. It's much more important than the hatch, actually. But that was kind of the school of thought at that time. And then you just didn't see. You had so much emphasis in the late 70s, or 70s, I mean early 70s through all the 70s really, with selective trout and trout strategies from Swisher and Richards. Most everything was placed on the hatch, matching the hatch. Everything was the hatch. And so I don't know why they didn't place more emphasis on the spinnerfall, especially in the East, like I said, even there. And still to this day, I mean, one of the biggest hatches in the East is the Hexagenia hatch. And frankly, few, if any, people have ever fished the hatch because it can happen over such a, one, they hatch out of very shallow mud. And it can happen all day, frankly, but it's sporadic. Whereas the spinnerfall is what everybody calls the hatch, is when all the bugs come back and hit the water at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And still to this day, they refer to it as the hatch, but it's truly the spinnerfall. So why people don't place more emphasis on it, I don't really know. most astute anglers, I mean, in any technical water, they really will key in on the spinners probably more than they do the hatch in most instances.
Uh-huh.
I would guess. I mean, most of the people I fish with are, you know, any evening fishing for the most part is a spinner fall. Even though you'll see the duns in the air with them, when it really gets down to it, you better be savvy to how they're taking the spinners as opposed to the duns.
So someone getting started in fly fishing might assume in the evening that it's a hatch going on and the bugs are rising out, but they need to pay close mm-hmm. attention to see that they're going into the water.
Correct. And it's a real easy way to get fooled out there, because if you're lucky, the spinners, you'll see them in the air. And if not, when you look at the water, because they're not sitting up, one, there's low light, they're not sitting up with their wings showing so much, and so you can get faked out real easily, you know, and just keep throwing. It happens on the Madison a lot because you have broken water in most places, and you have such a high concentration of caddis, and they're dipping and doing their thing, and yet the fish are eating softly, and you get faked out. You think, you know, what you're seeing are caddis, but what the fish are eating are spinners
mm-hmm.
of one type or another. And you can't really see them, so, you know, you get faked out.
Yeah, I know we're going to talk about this a little later, about rigging up for those mm-hmm. different kinds of conditions and trying to sort it all out, because, yeah, that could be, I guess, a typical situation where you could be fishing an adult dry fly on the surface with an emerger below, and that's not what's happening at all.
That's a great point, Roger, and you brought up trichos, which, you know, when I grew up fishing, I remember one of the first articles, they called it the white curse, and that's one of the things where you will frequently have dun showing, and the fish will exclusively be eating spinners. And even though there's, you know, you've seen the thousands and thousands of trichos that can hit the water.
Right.
And you'll see the ones with their wings up, and yet the fish will frequently get exclusively eating just the spinners. And part of it's because they realize from having eaten plenty of them that the spinner can't leave the water, just like the cripple can't. The cripple can't leave the water, and the spinner can't. Well, they can, but they don't. They hit the water and they're done. They're over. I hate saying that because I say done, and done is the term for an adult mayfly.
Yeah,
they're
right.
Finished when
they're finished yeah.
when they hit the water. And
yeah.
So they become, they don't ever waste time that way. When they go
right.
up to eat a spinner and it's on the water, they know it's not going to fly away right before they open their mouth.
Right, right.
So,
yeah. Wasted energy.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good. Well, we need to take a quick break here, Kelly, but when we come back, we'll talk with you more about cripples and spinners. Front Range Anglers, a full-service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they will give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at frontrangeanglers.com. That's www.frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Kelly Gallup about cripples and spinners. If you'd like to ask Kelly a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Got a couple questions coming in here on the Internet, Kelly. Before we get to those, tell us a bit about your business up there. You're right up there on the Madison, one of the most beautiful parts of fly fishing country in Montana, and tell us what you do and services you offer and what you're doing in the fly fishing world lately.
Well, we're a lodge right on the, I mean, we're not right on the Madison, we're 35 feet from it, so.
Rub it in, Kelly, rub it in.
if you have one too many martinis, you might fall in. But we're right here on the Madison. We're in the upper walkway section. We've got a, you know, full range fly shop and just the lodge and guides, and it's just beautiful right here on the river. It's kind of hard. It, you know, it's kind of a hard place to not go out and test new flies. So I do a lot of fly testing here.
After all these years, you're still testing, huh?
I was tying flies before I called you. I can't, I don't know. I don't know how you get that. I always tell people to start their kids on heroin. It's easier to quit. I don't know. I think I started tying when I was six or eight, and I still can't get away from it.
Still
and
can't.
Having
yeah.
the Madison to test your flies is not a bad deal whatsoever. We also have a website where we sell all my flies, and www.slidein.com. And there's a forum on there and whatnot. And
sell your books there, too?
Yeah, books, DVDs, everything around there. And by the way, on that book I'm giving away, at the end of the thing, I'm going to throw the DVD in as well.
Oh, terrific.
So,
well, that'll be nice for that lucky winner. Yeah, so the website is www.slidein.com, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yep.
And phone number, in case they want to call?
406-682-4804.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Well, folks, if you're up in that country, need a place to stay and an incredible guide, be sure to look Kelly up. He certainly knows the waters around that area. Beautiful place. Plus, there's a lot of other places to fish around there, too.
Yeah, not,
a stone's throw away.
You're not limited on choices here.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. Well, let's see here. We have Joel in Ranchester, Wyoming. He says, is there such thing as a midge spinner fall?
Not technically. Just like with the caddis, they're not technically considered spinners, but they do come back to the water in good concentrations by the millions, actually. And it's just showing my ignorance. There is a term, I'm sure, for that, but it's not a spinner fall.
Okay.
It's just because they're midges, they have a different... But yes, they do come back, lay eggs, and die on the surface, just like the mayflies. And sometimes it can be pretty incredible numbers.
Oh, yeah, real incredible. Gosh.
Yeah.
I've been down on the San Juan River in New Mexico when the water was just black with them, you know.
Yeah, and that's what makes most of the Western rivers so fertile is that they have really 24/7, 365 midges hatching on them. And I mean, I had a day here, I don't know, 3 years ago when it was 48 below zero, and I went down to the river to take pictures of the frost, and there were actually fish. Well, actually, at that point, it was 38 below. It warmed up 10 degrees. And there were actually fish-eating midges. There's a little thermal barrier between the super cold air and the water temperature being warmer, and they're actually eating dry flies at 38 below zero.
My gosh.
It wouldn't do any good because you couldn't make a cast without you'd freeze, you know, everything would freeze up. That's why these rivers are so fertile. Like you say, the San Juan, it's that huge concentration of midges.
Right, right. Another question from Joel is, can you tell whether a fish is taking a spinner or a dun by the rise form? That's a good question.
That is a good question, and frankly, that's the key to really fishing dry flies well, is observation. You know, obviously, if you can see close enough and you can see the dun, and you can actually, and believe it or not, it seems very rudimentary, but believe it or not, it's passed over very, very frequently, is just to stop and look. I mean, in the book, I talk about, you know, being able to tell which way the fish is feeding, left or right. And you should stalk as close as you can to see if you can see them actually eating the dun. But what you'll generally notice, if you can't, is it will be a much softer rise. Generally, you won't see the whole head come up and just like his nose come out. You'll frequently see almost like an emerger rise where you'll see just the hump of the back and maybe the tail, which is telling you that it's a very casual soft feed. You know, it's just a, there's no panic to it. There's no splash to it. It's just a very casual feed. And sometimes, and it just depends, if, you know, you, frequently when you have duns on the water, especially if there's trying to, if there's a pretty good emergence and they're getting to the surface and then still, frequently you'll see them, basically they never even ride the water, and you'll have, they'll just kind of swim up through the surface, to the surface, they'll hit the surface, pop out of their nymphal shuck, and basically keep right on flying. In that case, you'll see a pretty splashy rise. It's frequently you'll see that with caddis because they pop through the water so quickly, so it's a much more aggressive rise. With a spinner rise, it's almost always very casual, very soft, and that's really your only telltale, other than being able to see the insects themselves.
So instead of, it's kind of like instead of chugging a beer, you're sipping that martini, right?
Dipping the martini.
No need to rush on this, right? I'll just take my spinners as they come. Right?
Exactly.
Are the here's a question that doesn't have anybody's name assigned to it, but it says, are the fish being more selective in a spinner fall as opposed to a hatch, or is it all opportunistic feeding?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know if they become more selective to one or the other if they're on the dun, but one thing you will frequently see is they will become selective to one or the other. More times than not, they will become selective to knockdowns or spinners. Now, you know, it's not many of these bugs, and that's one of the confusing parts of that question, is that you don't have spinners in very often, spinners and adults in the same playing field. They happen at different times of the day. A couple of the, you know, trichos will hatch like that. You'll have a mix of dun because the females hatch sexually mature, as do the Ephron leucans, the white bugs from the east. Very few, a few of the Epeorus do too. There's sometimes you have two subspecies hatching, or two different ones, and one hatches and one's coming back. But most of the time, your spinners all come at once, you know. So you,
uh-huh.
And what people confuse is the spinners will hit the water, and their wings will still be standing up. They look just like a dun, and they don't necessarily have to hit the water and drop with their wings. But what you'll see is they'll become selective. You'll see those ones that wings are standing up, and they're not taking those yet. Usually, they become more selective to that. And from this cripple perspective, now again, a cripple is not a stage or anything like that. A cripple is just something that's, you know, something happened on the way to the park. He's hatching along and a gust of wind hits him and knocks his wings in. And if he can't get one wing out, basically he's crippled. He's done and he's in that water with no way to get out. So, they become, and actually in the book I wrote, or I didn't write, I interviewed several people in the book, and I asked Gordon Rose from Bighorn, or actually it's from Quill Gordon's on the Bighorn, and Gordon said that on the Bighorn for the trichos and the betas, he thought that a knockdown was the most significant or important bug to have in your fly box, because there's so much wind in the west, and when the bugs are hatching, and that's one of the things that happens to them that makes them become a cripple. Just they get knocked over, and they can't upright themselves. And so in that case, they become incredibly selective to knock down bugs. When there's thousands and thousands of adult duns on the water, and you can see them, and yet they're taking something you can't, you're not recognizing that they're taking it. It's frequently a crippled knockdown.
So a quick gust of wind could layer the water with those knockdowns.
Yeah.
Basically what you've got is, again, that, you know, the vulnerable insects, whether it's a dun that's already spent or a cripple that can't move properly, and the trout take advantage of that situation.
Absolutely.
Expend
and that's
less
the key.
Energy.
That is, You know, when you start talking about people that have gone to a different level, it's their ability to, you know, discern that happening. They, you know, you keep putting out, and that, you know, you put your perfect imitation out there, and your perfect imitation, and it looks just like the dun you've grabbed, and yet they're not eating it. And 9 times out of 10, if you'll switch over to a cripple or smash your fly down, get it lower in the water, don't have it look so out of the vise pretty, frequently that's the difference between a great day and a ho-hum day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got another question, and then let's talk. This is a follow-up from Joel about the midges. He says, do fish take the spent midge? I assume they do, but...
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
You see,
now, let's talk a little bit about flies. We've got a question from Cody, looks like Canarday, in Athens, Georgia. And he says, I've never carried or tied a specific cripple pattern. What are some of the good ones to entice those selective fish?
Well, Cody, that's a great question. And I've got to go backwards a little bit. There are very few cripples on the market. There are a lot of flies that are called cripples that are actually emergent flies. And they're not truly like Quigley Cripple is a phenomenal pattern. Unbelievable. But it's really more of a crippled emerger, one that really hasn't got out of the shuck. What I talk more about are adult cripples. And so, you can look up my book. If you look on the cover of the book, you'll see that the cripple is a very basic pattern. It's what it does different than the rest is it has the radius to the body. And that, I patented that hook, which really wasn't, you can't really patent hooks, so I just did that to keep the wolves away, but it worked for a while. for a long time, actually. But, any rate, what happens is when you look at an insect, and that's really how the whole book was written, was that I was out on the river one evening, and I was catching fish, but I had a very good spinner fall happening. And what happened was every time I would, and I frankly caught virtually every fish that I'd cast to, but virtually every one broke cadence on its rise. These fish were very softly eating spinners. Very softly. And every time I'd cast one, even though they ate it, they ate harder and louder and, you know, more aggressively. And I realized, you know, if you let your ego get in the way, you'd say, wow, they like my fly better than they like the real one. Well, that's not how life is. You know, you don't sit down to a steak and about your 50th bite just slam your face into the plate and go, I gotta have that. What the fish were doing were saying, they knew something was up, but it was too late. They kind of broke cadence and made a splashy rise. And so I went back and seined the river, and I took a couple hundred bugs and looked at them in the pan. And what I realized was more than half of those insects had a curved body, and more than 70% of them only show one wing. And in some cases, like on the cover of the book, if you look at the trico picture, it's about 80% only show one wing. But we've been programmed to believe that we have this idea. It's kind of like, you know, when you think of a caddis, you think of this big, bushy elk hair caddis. It's not, you know, catches a lot of fish, but it's not the greatest pattern for being specific to look like the caddis. And so what I did was I came up with that fly that has the bent hook and shows a single wing. And, of course, I'm going to say that's my favorite because it's mine, but it truly is. If in an adult world, the knockdown version, one wing showing, the radius to the fly, I think is specific, is a must-have bug. And, frankly, even during a good hatch, I will fish that. I will start with that fly more often than not because the fish sometimes won't eat a dun, but they will always eat a cripple if it's, you know, right size, shape, and all that.
Sure,
but
sure. And
they will always. Excuse me?
If you're in the size range, I assume they'd be less picky about that than the dun, right?
Yep. And, I mean, they know, again, back to the reason why they eat them is that the dun can get away. and they become, and especially on water that is very technical, or frequently the word technical is kind of a misnomer. It's more overfished. You know, fish aren't real technical when they're never fished. But when they've been pressured, like you just mentioned, the river, the San Juan, the Henry's Fork, you know, many of the spring creeks, places where they've been fished a lot. That's when you need to weigh things in your advantage by having something that they don't see every day. And very few people fish cripples.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one that you're talking about with the bent hook and the one wing, what was the name of that?
It's just Gallup's cripple.
Okay. And I'm looking in the book here, and I see Gallup cripples, and I see knockdown.
Right on the cover. If you look
at
the
cover, in the patterns in the back is where I was looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it just show, I don't know, I never really came up with a fancy, you know, it was more fun naming my streamers because I had all these crazy names to them.
So do you just physically bend those hooks then?
Yeah.
If you're using a TMC 100 or something?
Yep. And I actually don't use TMCs so much anymore. I went to the Daiichis. They seem to be a little softer, or the Dairikis, either one. The Tiemcos seemed, for this particular fly, seemed to be just a little brittle. And
brittle.
So I went to the, like an 1180 Daiichi, whatever dry fly hook. I don't know. And the key to bending the hook, you can do it right on the stream. You can tie them. You can, in mag practice, I was telling you earlier about Gordon Rose talking about how important they were. He simply takes a regular fly and twists the whole thing sideways and clips the bottom hackle off and gets a knockdown version of it. The problem with that is that the fly is shot once you've done that, once you spin the thing sideways. That's all right if it's catching enough fish, I guess. But what I do is I actually bend them in my vise before I tie them. And the key to bending them properly is to make sure your vise is loose. You can't have the jaws of your vise tight around the hook. If it's tight around the hook, it'll snap the hook. So you just make sure it's a little sloppy in there, and you just bend it to the radius that you like. I tell people to trace out a scud hook and just lay a scud hook on its side and trace the outside of it. And then when you bend your cripple hook, you just kind of get to that shape, and it's a good starting point. One of the best tires I know, unbelievable tire, Andy Sabota, ties it, and he pretty much exclusively fishes these flies. He ties them a lot better than I do, but he does a more radical bend than I do. And, you know, it's all personal. It's what you like. He probably catches more fish than I do, too, so maybe I should follow his key, he's doing, but that's what I do. I just like that soft radius to the hook.
Mm-hmm. So, folks you that can't see this picture, and I apologize that we don't have something to show you here via audio, but or on the site, but maybe we can get a picture of that up on the site. But basically, if you're looking down on the hook, then it's bent at about, 60-degree angle there, just to the side. So it's just crooked body.
Yeah, the key to that, Roger, is that, and it's no different than if you think about it, even on a dun, because we fish these in duns as well, if there's any amount of wind or turbulence in the water, you know, it's just, you don't, if it's windy out, you don't stand totally erect with your feet close together. You're always bending your body back and forth. If you're on the ground and I say, you know, lay down on the ground, now sit up. You don't sit up straight. You bend your body to get up for balance. And the bugs do the same thing always. They're always in movement. And so, but when we look at them, we almost always look at them in a photograph, sitting on a branch or sitting on somebody's tying vise or whatever, and they're very static. You know, they're stiff. Whereas in nature, they're always moving, and that's the difference is when you look at these insects on the water, these imitations, there's just a little bit of life breathed into them from that radius.
Right.
Not as stiff looking.
Yeah, yeah. We need to take a quick break again here, Kelly. But when we come back, folks, we'll answer more of your questions about cripples and spinners and how to use them to catch some big trout. At Housatonic River Outfitters, we offer the finest in fly fishing products in Connecticut and fly fishing guides on the Housatonic, Farmington, and other waters. You have the option of wade fishing trips or drifting the river with our guides. In addition to the spectacular trout fishing, we offer guided fishing trips and spin fishing guide trips for warm water species. Please tour our website at www.dryflies.com to view the fishing products and guide services we offer in Connecticut and Massachusetts. We're the first fly shop in Connecticut to offer drift boat guide services, and we have the largest established guide service in New England. To learn more about Housatonic Outfitters, visit www.dryflies.com. That's www.dryflies.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Kelly Gallup about cripples and spinners. If you'd like to ask Kelly a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, well, we did have a question come in, and maybe this would be an appropriate time to kind of sketch one of these flies out here, Kelly. Gene May in Thousand Oaks, California, wants to know, where can we get a recipe for the fly that Kelly invented? I assume he's talking about the cripple we've just been talking about. Can you kind of do that quickly over the... the wire here?
I can. I mean, it's a very basic, and I, for anybody that wants to email me, they can email me and I can send them a picture of one so they can see it, because it's a very simple fly, and I think that's important to a lot of flies. I think we get over complicated on them, but this one, first and foremost, you bend the hook. I bend the hook towards me so that the eye of the hook's fate coming at me. Some people bend it away. I find it easier to have it on the inside, the bend looking at me, because I can see the wing placement. But this particular fly, like you said, is very basic. It's just a tail and an abdomen. Just think of an Adams. And so you've got the tail set. I like the tail the length of the body or slightly longer. And then you've got the abdomen, which I like to kind of two-tone my abdomens. I never use a specific color. If you look at the cover of the book, you'll see they're kind of mottled. I don't think color is all that critical in flies on the surface. I think the silhouette is everything. And so, but that being said, I still try to match the color as close as humanly possible. And so when I mix my dubbings, I usually take one-third of a toning color and then two-thirds of the base color. So if I wanted an olive brown, I would take two-thirds olive and one-third brown, and I'd set them on top of each other, and I fold them over three or four times. I don't try to get it specifically brown olive. I like it to come off when I start putting it on the thread and dubbing it. I like it to be green, and then a little spot of brown, and then green, and you don't think about it, because if you do, you'll end up with a brown olive. What I wanted to do is to have kind of a variegated appearance when I'm done. And if you would look
almost
at
a camouflage kind of.
Yeah,
effect.
Exactly. And,
yeah.
And if you look at any abdomen of any insect, they're two-toned because they have segments. But anyway,
right.
You do your tail, your body, your abdomen. And then at the two-third point, I set the wing. And it's set, instead of standing upright, it's coming horizontal. Or no, it'd be vertical. I'm not sure what it'd be. It's coming straight off the side of the hook. And then I set that wing, and the wing should be the length of the body. So it's coming off straight at you. Not standing up like a parachute, just straight at you. And then I tie in the hackle. And then I dub the thorax. And that's another thing. The thorax is generally darker than the abdomen. And it's at least 30% thicker on all mayflies than its abdomen. So you beef up the thorax, a third bigger than the abdomen, with your dubbing. Then you put three turns of hackle around. I put one in front of the wing, or put, excuse me, one right behind the wing, one in front of the wing and then one more forward because they have six legs. So now you've got tail, abdomen, thorax, wing, three turns of hackle, finish your fly off, and then go under and clip the hackle completely flat on the bottom. So this fly sits down in the film. And I would tell you and everyone listening that very often, and you'll see experienced guides do this all the time, you can often just take any fly you've got in your box and clip off the bottom of the hackle and get it to sit more in the water. Remember, the fly sits on its abdomen. And in old school flies, your basic atoms, any of those flies were designed to basically stand on the tip of the tail and the tips of the hackle. And the fly actually sits on its abdomen. So the closer in the water you get it, frequently that's the code cracker right there. That you can take virtually any fly and get it to sit a little lower and a little more naturally in the water, and you'll catch more fish. This one just starts out that way.
I don't know if you said this or not, but did you tell us what kind of wing material you used for the?
I use Antron, but okay. I don't think that's critical.
Okay.
You know, Zelon, Antron. There's a bunch. I actually use crinkly Zelon, which is an Antron. Well, I don't even know if it's an Antron. I get mine. I think it's pretty hard to find anymore, but there's a ton of them out there that are just almost identical.
Yeah,
personally,
yeah.
I like to, and I get mine from, I think, Craig Matthews at Blue Ribbon Trout Flies in West Yellowstone is about the only guy I know that's still got a pretty good supply of it. If I offended someone because they have more, call me because I'm always looking for it. I can't. Craig and Beth started that forever ago, and I don't know who has any left. But there's products that have taken its place, you know, like anything else. I just particularly like the Zelon, crinkly Zelon.
They can ask Craig about that on our next show because we're going to have him talking about the Yellowstone on our next show. So.
Well, he, as far as I know, he's got the world supply of it. Never shows up missing out of that basement. I have nothing to do with it.
Well, we have Rod has kind of a follow-up question on the cripples. It's Rod Brashears in Amarillo. He says, I've always been told that a cripple is basically an insect that is stuck in the shuck, per se. So is there any truth to that?
Absolutely. And that's what I referred to earlier, Rob, was that the most of the cripples, actually pre and post, I'm not sure there were any pre this book, but most of them are all that. They were flies who could not escape the nymphal shuck and as such were crippled in the film. Actually, Swisher and Richards referred to those as stillborns back in the early 70s. And that's what most of the cripples were. And so, yeah, they're both are true. A cripple is anything, literally anything that can't fly away. I mean, for whatever reason, that bug can't fly off the water, it becomes a cripple. And I guarantee you the fish become, for example, ants. Man, we have a flying ant hatch. You get an ant with its wings in, and it kicks its legs. And oh, my God, the fish will go well out of their way to find those things. And so, but it's a cripple as well. It's a totally healthy adult, but once it touches the water, it has no mechanism to fly away. Grasshoppers, same thing. And then, of course, a fly hatching out of its nymphal shuck can't get up and fly away is a cripple. And that's what I referred to earlier about Quigley's, Mercer and Quigley both have incredible cripple emergers. Craig Matthews has a good one. There's several out there. And most are kind of in the same vein. They have the little bit of the wing, most of the nymphal shuck hanging down, and, you know, the fly trying to emerge out of it and can't.
So cripple may not be the best name out there. Maybe it's more incapacitated or something
actually,
like that. Yeah.
Actually, Roger, and I think I had about 35 reviews of that book, and the only bad review I've ever had on a book was that, and it was somebody from my hometown who, actually my home state, who said he was offended that I used the word cripple in this day and age.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And he got run out of town, I think. I don't know. But, I don't know, yeah, whatever, flight impaired, if that helps. They can't fly away, and that's what
it could be
sense.
Like a wildebeest stuck in the mud, attacked
that's
by a lion. It's just,
that might
you know.
Be one of my new flies.
Wildebeest. Oh, and add stuck in the mud at the
exactly.
end there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Look, you're looking for new fly pattern names, huh? Okay.
Always.
Joel again asks, and I guess maybe we weren't clear on this, but he says, Kelly said that cripples almost always shows only one wing. I'd like him to describe what he means by that. Is he referring to a wing lying flat on the surface or one upright? That is, what exactly did you mean?
Well, in that, when I was talking about that I was being specific to mayflies and crippled mayflies, and the spinner, well, an adult, it could be both to answer Joel's question. A knockdown dun will show one wing in the water and maybe one wing up sometimes. And I frequently tie it that way where I'll have the post up and the one wing to the side. But what I was referring to when I said that was that in a spinner fall, when all the bugs come back, and we've always kind of, if you look at any spinner previous to these spinners coming out, they were two wings out to the side, and then kind of crucified looking.
Right.
What I
right.
found in my, the first thing that I saw is one of the better tires I've ever known, Dave Ellis. Guy just had a mind for detail for this sort of thing. He did what was called the triple wing spinner, because looking at most spinners, less than 15% of the body of the overall silhouette was wing, when in most cases it's more like 60 to 70. So he was the first one to address that. But then I started looking at, I started seining the river during spinner falls, and I would take 200 bugs at a time. And I would start breaking them into groups of 10 and counting. And what it was is on the spinner fall, better than 70% of the time, the bug had fallen to the side and the wings were off to one side. It showed only one wing. The wings were kind of folded together, kind of like if you're laying on your side and you put your hands together.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the insects do.
All the fish see is
all,
one wing.
Exactly. So you're seeing one wing. And so, and that's what I was addressing, was the one wing showing. And whenever you had that, you have that radius to the body. And that's where the whole cripple thing came up with for that fly.
So, Kelly, do you tie, you have in your box, do you have cripples of all the major mayflies that are in your area or the area you're fishing?
Always.
I wouldn't fish a hatch
without a cripple. And frankly, at this point, I would say, and again, it's a little bit back to that, this guy I was talking about before, Andy Sabota, used to guide for me, still does guide for me. I you know, even though it was my bug and things like that, he was so sold, he started with them right in the beginning of the hatch, and he would just routinely outfish me. And I would start with a dun because it was just, you know, what you do. And after a, you know, not the sharpest guy, but after about the third time he did that to me, I said, okay, I can play this game too. And I started doing, and I, at this point, I don't know, probably 80% of the time I start with a cripple, even if
really?
It's a great hatch. But what I do, because I'm now 50 and my eyes aren't quite what they were 30 years ago, I will put a dun in front of the spinner, which I know we're going to get to in a minute about rigging.
Sure, now we can start talking about that, sure.
Well, and in the book, even when I wrote the book, I mean, many years ago, I had trouble seeing, you know, you get out and you're watching the spinner or whatever fly, you know, 25, 30 feet away, you got a little glare, you got this or that. I don't want a false step. I don't want to miss a strike. One, I think it's terrible on the fish because, you know, if you pick up, you frequently can put a fish down by just picking that fly off the water too fast. So I like something that tells me where the fly is. But, like I said, at this point, I frequently start with a knockdown cripple. And so what I do is I take a high-vis comparadon, which for those of you who don't know what it is, it's a comparadon using a high visibility light. Like I use the material called high-vis. And, or you can use an antron, but you're just doing a comparadon with a synthetic wing because you can see them forever. And then I'll run that knockdown or that cripple, you know, 10, 12 inches behind it so I can track both flies. I seldom fish a fly further than that apart. I frequently see people fishing them 2-3 feet apart. The problem with that is when you have compound currents, you'll frequently get one fly going one speed and one going the other, and it seems to only happen right as you need it not to when it crosses the fish's feeding lane, and the flies will tighten up. They'll get caught between two currents. One of the two of the flies will tighten up and get drag. And so I like to keep that shorter if possible.
Well, I think you just addressed one of the questions we had on the Internet, but let me pose it to you anyway. Rod Brashears in Amarillo again. With such a high concentration of spinners in a specific area, how or what is the best way to fish your hard-to-see spinner fly? So I think you just described a way to do that.
Yeah, I do. That's what I do. I always, not always, but frequently, more times than not, and I'll tell you another fly I use during the spinner fall is called a Compara spinner. And I don't, Dave Ellis was the first guy to do the Compara done with the high vis. And what I did was I took the Compara done and I put a second wing behind it. And so basically, when you look at it from the bottom, what you see is you'll see a spinner silhouette. But what the fish sees, excuse me, is a spinner silhouette. What you see is a comparadon. That is one way to really put the odds in your favor. And that's the, and I'll use that fly. Man, it's almost exclusively the fly I use in front of my spinners. Because it could be taken as a dun or a spinner, first of all. And then I'll run that spinner, the hard-to-see one, again, 10, 12 inches behind.
Now, right. Very close,
but
yeah.
The Compara spinners, for those of us who are visually challenged, it is an incredible fly because it absorbs light. You can actually see it. Or a parachute's another good pattern to use in front of the knockdowns or crippled flies.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a couple questions here, changing to a little bit different topic here. Richard Brew in Derry, New Hampshire says, I love to fish wet flies. Do you have any suggestions for techniques and patterns to imitate cripples and or spinners? And then we had a similar question from Dan in Denver. Says, Kelly, do you like soft tackles for spinners? If so, which ones are your favorite and how would you like to fish them? So can you kind of address the soft hackle, wet fly?
Absolutely. Those are great questions because I do that a lot. In the book, I've got what's called the sunk spinner. And by the way, for Rainey's flies, does all of my flies and at this point. And they could go on, anybody could go online and find any of these flies to see a picture of them. But I, during a spinner fall, and during the, in the book, I describe this in pretty good detail. I almost always fish a soft hackle during a spinner fall. And I fish what I call a sunk spinner. The difference between which is a soft tackle. For all practical purposes, it's a glorified soft tackle. It's got a tail and wings and then a soft tackle. But it is a soft tackle. I mean, soft tackles are just drowned insects. And what I do with that one, it's a little different. And this, again, on heavy pressured water, or as we like to call them because it makes us sound more important, technical water, I almost always fish a soft tackle or my sunk spinner. And what I do there, and during the spinner fall, in the book I kind of go through the transition. I'll kind of briefly go over it before I continue this. When the flies come back to the water, they'll either be, their wings will be standing up sometimes, some of them will be down, some of them will be up, and then you'll virtually see all of them with their wings down. And then what happens is that the flies are just constantly getting churned into the water. And so they're getting sucked under the water. And what usually happens is you'll see the insects and you'll see the fish eating on them, and then there'll be a few less and a few less. And what's happening is the bugs are sinking. Even in really placid water, eventually they sink. And if, and what you'll hear when you fish with people on a spinnerfall is, well, they're full. Well, unless they ate a 12-inch trout, they aren't full. They don't quit eating. I mean, it's almost impossible to get a fish to quit eating if there's still food present. What's happening is that the spinners are getting sucked underwater. So I fish it, we can kind of go back to the last question. I start with the comparadon and put the triple on. And then I'll either go to, as the spinnerfall continues and more bugs get underwater, then I make sure I put on a soft tackle or a sunk spinner behind, at that point, either a compara spinner or the cripple, but it becomes very hard to see the cripple when you do that. So I frequently put on the compara spinner in front of it because the other flies below it is sunk. That will go on for maybe 20 minutes, and then you'll see virtually no rises whatsoever. And at that point, I'll put on a soft tackle or a sunk spinner and another drowned cripple, and I'll fish them in the film without any weight. Eventually, I'll end up basically nymphing two soft tackles or two sunk spinners because all the bugs are getting churned down to the bottom, and the fish will move down with that occurrence. Now, what he asked me about, I'm sorry, who was it, Dan, did you say?
Dan. Yeah, he said, which do you like soft tackles for spinners and which ones are your favorites? Yeah.
My favorite is, and I'll kind of describe it because in the book it hadn't kind of grown to where it is today. I use three tails, and I use a short shank hook frequently, three tails of a soft like partridge, a Biot body, then I put in a little thorax, set a wing across. Originally, I did them up and down, so they were straight up and down. Anymore, I'm tying them sideways, you know, like a traditional spinner, and then one or two turns of soft tackle in front of it. And the reason I like that wing that way is you can occasionally dress it to keep it right in the film, and it sits more like the natural. Once it's underwater, it really doesn't matter. But in that technical water, I started to tell you before I went off on that description of how that happens, I will frequently take a fly and put the sunk spinner or the soft tackle below it, and I'll keep that 6 inches from the adult, especially when you get into very placid soft water like the Henry Sport, for example, or the Asabo in Michigan, or the Latorte back east. I mean, any of these really soft, soft waters where they just almost, you know, don't have a current to look at. I like it to be, that fly to be just underneath the surface. I mean, virtually an inch or two under the surface. But I have to be able to see the insect or the fish. You will frequently not see the fish come up and actually boil or anything like that. So I like them they're very used to seeing. You got to remember, there's thousands of insects during a spinnerfall. Or a hatch for that matter, frequently. They're used to seeing bugs clustered up close to each other. And so the closer that is, the better I can see the detection of the strike. You know, I can see my dry fly move a little bit, and I see that the fish has taken the one underwater. I can tell you that on the Henry's Fork, which is known worldwide for humbling anglers, I mean, because it takes so much pressure, that when you go down, when I started fishing a soft tackle or, you know, my sunk spinners just under the film like that, I think it doubled my tapes. I mean, you'll see, you'd see the fish come up and just kind of look, you know, you come up and haze underneath your dry fly and just eat that soft tackle like nothing.
Wow.
And the other thing about that is you can generally go up one and frequently two sizes with a sunk fly. So, for example, you asked about trichos earlier. Back, for here they're bigger, I don't know why, but in Michigan, where I fished a lot of trichos, they were almost always 24s and 6s, which is a challenge. But I could always get away with a 20 or 22 soft tackle or sunk spinner underneath it.
But we need to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll finish up and we'll talk maybe a little bit about presentation and strategies here. Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome, and equipment is provided. Learn more about fly fishing for women at www.womensflyfishing.net. That's womensflyfishing.net, or call them at 907-274-7113. 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Kelly Gallup about cripples and spinners. If you'd like to ask Kelly a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. We had someone write in here, Kelly, that said, gave me a URL, Dave in Denver, in fact. We were just talking about his question here. And he has supplied me with a URL to an article out on Fly Fisherman's Magazine's website, that's one of your articles. And it's for those that want to look this up, because they can get a picture of what Kelly was talking about. It's www.flyfisherman.com/ F as in Frank, T as in Tom, B as in Boy, / K as in Kelly, G as in Gallup, Cripple. Okay, so you got www.flyfisherman.com/FTB/ KG Cripple. And it's got a picture there and some tying instructions and some pictures that you took of live curved bodies there. That's really, that really kind of shows it how it is there.
Don't remember the, is that, do you see the article, Roger? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Is it on sunk spinners?
It's called Spinner Cripples. So it's got your name on it and shows your fly there and the vise. And
hell, getting old, can't remember all this stuff. But I know it.
So, so the picture you're talking about in the vise from the top down is a great picture there. And then it shows the real live ones curved as well, and it's got the recipe there. So they're all set. Even shows how to tie it there. So there you go, folks. And thanks, Dave, for sharing that with us.
Somewhere in the past, I know I did one on sunk spinners for fly fishermen, and there's pictures of that sunk, I don't know what year it was. It was 4 or 5 years ago, I'd say. And there are pictures of the sunk spinners as well.
Okay, good, good. Well, let's talk a little bit. We don't have much time left here, but, and this is something I meant to ask earlier, but Martin Coleman says in Lawrence, Kansas, wants to know, is there a time of day or year that spinners and cripples are most effective? And I guess earlier on when you were talking about that, how, you know, hatches could be in the morning and the spinner fall at night, I guess that's something you could ask local guides and so forth about when the fall happens for a particular kind of mayfly, or is that
Absolutely.
Ready knowledge that's available in books or something?
Absolutely. I mean, every serious fly angler should be very acutely aware of what time they don't change. They've been doing this since they started hatching who knows how many years ago, thousands and thousands. Now, for example, you'll have trichos. That's a morning spinner fall. Most of your betas hatch in the morning. They have evening and spinners, morning spinner falls. You have to figure out which ones, and it's not, there's no mystery to it. You could call any fly shop in the country. They can tell you when where you're at, what time of day the spinners are going to hit the water. But they can tell you when the bugs hatch, almost always. But there's an enormous amount of mystery to when the bugs, when the spinners come back. I don't know why. But just as an example, I don't know, the first couple of years I was here, and for some reason in the West there's not as much emphasis on the spinners, because I think mostly because the day fishing is so incredible that they don't really have to fish the spinners. The first few years that I was here, people would ask me, you know, how'd you do last night? Well, I had a really good night. And what were you fishing? Well, I was fishing a rusty spinner. And I heard more often than not, I thought this was flies only. And literally thought I was fishing gear. Because I said spinner.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was like, no. I mean, the final stage, you know, and it was an explanation. But, you know, it's, you can find that information. His question was, is there a better or best time? And there is. I mean, there's a better time to, obviously, you have to find out when the flies are coming back. When do the flies spin out and become spinners? And that changes. You know, sometimes, for example, the trico, everything will be over by, if you're in a really fortunate area, you might get an 11 o'clock and it's over by then. For example, in Michigan, most of those bugs, the females hatched at between 4:30 and 5:30 in the morning. By 7 o'clock, you wouldn't know there'd ever been a bug on the water. Completely game over. Conversely, and unfortunately, which happens simultaneously at that time of year, the hex hatch, all the spinners come back at 10:30 to 12 o'clock at night. All of them, done. And so, you know, you have to understand which ones are which. You know, many of your big drakes come back as spinners after 6 o'clock at night. And, you know, you just, any fly shop worth their salt should be able to tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you find out. If you don't have that opportunity, there are literally dozens of books out there on this. And they'll tell you when they come back, what time of day. One of the keys to being really good at finding these spinners, because even though you know they're back at, say, they all come back at 8 o'clock at night, they come back to a specific substrate, the bottom structure. And so once you've found them, you will always find them there again. Always. And that is frequently the difference between people who, if you've ever floated a river with a guide for a spinner fall, they will lock up a half hour before in a specific style of water.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hope for them to be everywhere. They go to where they know they're coming back to lay their eggs. So the best time of the day is to be when they're coming back. I mean, on a rare occasion, people can fish a spinner. You know, you can fish one all day as an attractor or just as, you know, bringing fish up. But it's important to find where they're coming to and let the fish tell you that it's time to feed them.
I noticed a lot of the questions we have here, Kelly, under tactics and presentation, you've pretty much answered things about, you know, what's the key indicator to look for cripples and spinners from Brian and Aztec. And I think you've pretty much gone through that. Did you want to say anything more about that?
Well, as far as the spinners, not so much. The spinners, you'll see the insect when they come back to the water. You know, you're fishing trichos and it's 7 o'clock in the morning and you see clouds of them. There shouldn't be too much to figure out. On the cripples, on the other hand, that's more, I think, that I frequently fish them more during an emergence or a hatch than I do anything else. That's just a matter of, you know, I'm being a little bit redundant here. It's just a matter of experiment. You know, try it at any time of the day if you've got fish rising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're actively feeding. And by the way, I didn't mention, but I also did that cripple in a caddis. And when you've got a good emergence of caddis, and all we do with the caddis, it's probably the most basic fly that's ever been tied. It's just a body and a wing. I mean, just a curved body in a wing and one turn of hackle in front of the wing. It just looks like it just doesn't look like much at all. But they will often, and you know, caddis, they move around, they're skating around, they run around, and you will frequently get crippled caddis as well. And it's just a simple, simple fly to tie. But, you know, all of them get crippled. So,
it's really interesting because, you know, I've looked at a lot of fly boxes, and very seldom, if almost never, see cripples in there. You know, it's not something that people show you. So I think this opens up a whole new doorway because it's almost contrary to the match the hatch thing. I mean, you're matching the hatch, but, you know, that perfect done imitation, you know, that everybody strives for, you know, is really kind of shot down with the cripple idea, right?
And frankly, you'll see very few spinners in fly boxes. And actually, before I wrote the book, there was one produced spinner. It was called the Rusty Spinner.
Right, that's an old pattern, right?
Yeah, and frankly, very few flies spin out rusty.
Right.
You know, we place so much emphasis on dubbing colors and this and that, but although they do darken frequently, it's pretty hard to find one that's actually dark rust. The key is that they're looking at them, and you know, usually in evening sky, and they're just silhouetting, so it doesn't. It's not as critical, but. There's a whole avenue of fishing there that's being missed, and I mean, frankly, you'll outfish yourself, you know, or your buddies if everybody's using the same fly. And another thing I might mention about this, and it's in the book, but you know, if you're fishing areas that are very technical, very overfished, for example, the bighorn. And I think I mentioned this in the book. I don't remember, but I went to one of my best friends, Mike Craig, had a shop there, Bighorn Anglers Forever, and he sold just thousands of dozens of the same fly, a white-winged parachute betis, for example. And, you know, there was only a couple of shops in a very used river. Now, just imagine there's 100 boats going down, you know, Mike and where the other shops sell basically the same fly, and that fish has seen thousands of presentations. And sometimes it's just a matter of coloring the wing. We started fishing black wings, not because of that, but because you could see them easier than you could the white ones in high light. And it was incredible what that difference was. I mean, the fish would, it was that simple of a change. When you know that every fly, every day they're seeing the same fly and you change it just that much. And when you do that, when you do the go to the cripple and they've seen the same parachute 100 times in the last hour and you throw them a fly with a little bit of a radius and a little bit of life to it, you suddenly have broke the code because nobody else is fishing it. So it's worth the effort.
Yeah, certainly seems so. Especially after, you know, just viewing that picture, and maybe we can get a couple of those pictures on our website of the naturals laying in the water with all the crooked bodies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the picture that you have in your mind, you know. Like you said, you listed a bunch of percentages earlier in the show, and I can see why, you know, when you sort it all out, you go, oh, I've been missing something for a long time.
Yeah, so. And that's... Ironically, you know, I always tell people, I says the irony is that the flies are dead, but the bending the hook breathes new life into the fly.
Right, right.
It's something that gives, it might just separate it from the last 50, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Something to help you out. I mean, that's what we're out there for.
We're trying to
catch more fish than their buddy.
There you go. Well, unfortunately, we've run out of time, and it's time to wrap things up. But when we return, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and that autographed copy of Kelly's book. So stay tuned.
And the DVD.
And the DVD. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this chance. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website at www.familytyes.com. It's T-Y-E, familytyes.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find the link on our homepage in the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link, leave some comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, now it's time to give away our prizes. First, we'll do the drawings, and then we'll ask the question to win Kelly's book. And here we go. So the first drawing is going to be for the 3-year membership to Federation of Fly Fishers, which is always a great gift to get. And we're drawing from our database. Now, if you haven't registered yet, it's a little too late, but those that have a chance. And our winner is Kevin Ellis. Kevin Ellis. Kevin's in Georgia. So congratulations, Kevin. And we'll get an email out to you, Kevin, to get your information so we can get that started. The second winner, and this is for, and by the way, the Federation's website is www.fedflyfishers.org. Fedflyfishers.org. If you're not familiar with them, it's a great organization worldwide that helps support us as fly fishers. The second winner, which is of a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine out of Calgary, Canada, great magazine, and our winner there is Dan Crowthers, in North Dakota. Dan Crowthers in North Dakota, so congratulations, Dan. I know you'll enjoy that magazine. It's a great one. And their website, by the way, is www.flyfusionmag.com, flyfusionmag.com. Well, now it's time to give away Kelly's book and DVD. And so that's going to be a nice prize tonight. And so the winner of this, who answers the question properly, will get that. And this is going to be the first place winner, the second place winner. And by the way, since most of you won't win the book, if you want to get a copy of Kelly's book, you sure can get it through www.slidein.com or give Kelly a call, and I'm sure he'll help you out there. And the second runner-up tonight in this will get a $20 gift certificate to Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. So, and you can redeem that either online or in their store, and that's their website is www.frontrangeanglers.com. So here's the question. The question is, there was one distinctive feature in a cripple that Kelly talked about that made it different from the rest, which might just get you that strike that you wouldn't have got otherwise. What is that distinctive feature? What is that distinctive feature? So be sure to fill out your name and where you're from. Otherwise, you won't qualify. So the first two winners, the first one will get the book and DVD from Kelly. And second one, okay. This could be an answer. Distinctive feature, Kelly, I was thinking bent hook. I just got Jared in Holland, Michigan, one wing. Which one do you think is the more distinctive feature?
Well, I think they're both critical. That's a tough one. One wing, curved body, pretty, yeah. You know, hometown boy. Hate to say one way or the other. Might have to make you take it.
Well, it's your choice. We've got Jared in Holland, Michigan with one wing, and then we've got Ed in Johnstown, bent hook. So we've got two, I guess we got two right answers.
Mike, we'll send them both one. we'll send them both a book. I think personally, you know, the silhouette's the most critical element to all dry flies.
And both of those things compose the silhouette, so.
Yeah, so
I should have asked a better question, I guess.
I'll make it easy. I'll send them both a book. So get, how's that?
Okay, you guys win. That's terrific. That's terrific. Well, Ed and Jared, please send me either online through the text box your email address so I can get a hold of you and pass that on to, along with your mailing address, to Kelly here, and he'll get you fixed up with those books. And you guys both owe Kelly now since he went overboard here and supplied all those books. And he'll probably make me pay for it later since I asked a not too specific question, but that's okay. Okay, so we'll give out the other $20 gift certificate for Front Range Anglers goes to Mark Power in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Mark Power. So, Mark, you too send me your email address so that I can connect with you. Either do it online in the text box or email it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. info@askaboutflyfishing.com. Well, good. That was fun. And it really kind of knocked home the idea of the bent body and the down wing as the signature profile of those cripples, which, like you said, Kelly, I think is really important. Well, Kelly, thanks again for being on our show. As always, it's a great pleasure to talk with you. I sure learned a whole lot tonight, and there's going to be some cripples and spinners in my box from this point forward.
Glad to hear
at least
it.
At least I'm admitting that they haven't been there in the past, but they're going to be there in the future, I guarantee. Well, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we can do it again.
Hey, thank you, Roger. It's always a pleasure.
Okay. Our next broadcast will be on December 17th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, and on that show we'll be interviewing Craig Matthews, who Kelly spoke of earlier tonight, and our topic for the show will be Yellowstone, Fly Fishing Paradise. And Craig Matthews has fished Yellowstone National Park for over 30 years. Tune in and learn from Craig where, when, and how to fish this incredibly beautiful and diverse fly fishing destination. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Front Range Anglers, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, and for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company might benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2. That's 888-961-1115, extension 2. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.